hello to you, because this is the fabulous Adam Richard. Welcome to the Poofcast. This will be the last one for a little while. This is what was left of our last recording block. This episode, you will get to meet one of my favourite people in the entire world, Jamie Rowe. He does the breakfast show in Melbourne with Chrissy Swan and Jane Hall. And he's quite hilarious in his own right and has one of the dirtiest laughs you've ever heard. He makes me sound quite sanitary, frankly. Also, Mother Horan will be taking us back to, well, the poofstery of one of the icons of gay culture over the last, oh my God, well, nearly 100 years. I mean, it makes me feel quite old because I'm nearly 29. Yes, we'll be discussing Judy Garland. So that is all coming up in the Poofcast this week. Just look, we will have something for you soon. It's just going to be a while before we can all three of us get together and record things. But, you know, thank you so much, everyone, for your messages of support and, you know, for being so patient during this rather trying time.
Mr. Humphries, leave my pussy alone.
Talk poofy to me.
All right, girls, one of my best girlfriends is on the phone.
Oh, my God. Hey. It's Rhonda Birchmore. Oh,
no, better than that.
It's Jazz from Preston 7-Eleven.
Yes. No, it's Jamie Rowe of Tents, or as the rest of the world knows her, Jamie Rowe. How are you, love?
Hi. Can we keep this busy? Quick, I'm really busy.
Is this going to take long?
This feels like we've been putting it off for 3 years. And I'm finally on.
I keep saying, do you want to do something? You go, yeah. And then, you know, you're busy with cock.
Yeah. I think I just ran out of excuses.
Yeah. And but no, really, there's been a lot of pressure. We have literally received no letters asking.
We did talk about you quite a bit with your workmate, Chrissy Swan, because you do the breakfast show with her
in
Melbourne. You're my direct competition. We shouldn't even be talking. This is like that time that me and Husey... Oh, we've never done anything.
No.
He doesn't drink.
This would be like if Victoria Principal and Linda Evans had lunch.
Yes.
Can you imagine that lunch?
I
can imagine that lunch. This would be much like our podcast.
This would be like...
all over the shop and drunk.
This would be like if Amy Winehouse and and Lance Armstrong did drugs together.
Because they were direct competitors.
Indeed. Mine.
Now, Gamey, you have a fondness for something. This is something you and Toby have in common.
Oh.
Your love of the commercial jetliner.
This is true.
Are you a plane guy, Jamie?
I'm massively into planes. I'm out at Tullamarine whenever I can with my little face pushed up against the wire.
Oh, yeah. Taking photos of the LL 737.
Absolutely. I've got all the apps. I actually follow three planes. I've got three of my favourite planes in the world. And I've got alerts that go to my phone. So I wake up in the morning and go, oh, VHOQF.
Oh, my God. Is that an Al-Qaeda app?
If they got wind of it, we'd all be stuffed.
Yeah. Really?
It's called Bombergram. Just out of interest, what are your three favourite planes?
Well, I am fond of your 747-400. I think that's the most beautiful plane of all time.
Old school. It's very old school.
I do like your A380.
The Glamour. Glamour girl. Gee, she likes them big, doesn't she?
She does like them big.
She's a size queen. Yeah. She's a sky size queen. And what's your third? It'll be like a 777 or something.
Fuck a friendship.
I was just going to say a 777.
Yeah, I knew it.
I'm mad for a Boeing, but a bit of an A380 thrown in there and a bit of Airbus's is also doing it for me, yeah.
Do you know what? Airbuses are beautiful planes. They're absolutely beautiful planes. They just have that little bit extra trouble staying in the sky. That is the only downside of an A380, of an Airbus.
Right.
I do a lot of travel, actually. One of my favourite things to get onto a plane and just travel all the time.
Do you get Randy on the plane? Is it a sexual thing or is it purely like
aesthetics? Don't make it dirty, Adam.
I don't know. Have any of you ever been picked up on a plane?
No.
I was once with Scott when a...
Not in that sense. When the... Although Wes was busted for explosives at Hobart Airport.
He was.
He was, actually, yes.
He set off the explosion detector.
With his secondhand bag.
That's no way to talk about Toby. No, when Scott and I once went to... Where were we going? I don't even know.
What's
we're going
story?
To Sydney.
Yeah.
And we got very drunk in a one-hour flight to Sydney because someone comes over and goes, oh, you work at that pub, don't you, at the Q&A? I've been there before. To Scott. And after that, it was on it was for young and old.
It's funny that you bring up alcohol because I got two stories and both involve grog.
Is one of you shelving one of those little bottles of Jacob's Creek?
One story involves a friend and a pilot on a flight to Europe.
Oh.
And
surely the pilot's second... busy.
Keep the hands on the joystick, please, Captain.
Captain.
It
Troy.
Didn't end up Ralph Fiennes. It was all fine. It wasn't grubby. Oh. The second story is much more. The second story is much more exciting because it ends with a Qantas flight attendant saying an hour before we landed, "You girls last night were putrid. You're the talk of business class."
Wow. Matt, if you are making a Qantas hostie call you putrid,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Those girls have seen things that I don't have names for,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God.
They're, most of them are Ralph Fiennes.
Well, do you want to hear that story
first? Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Go on.
Okay, so...
Even though we've already heard the punchline. Carry on.
So, well, me and my best mate and my ex were flying business to Sydney, from Sydney to LA.
Mm.
And so we're in the Qantas business lounge having a few drinks. When I say having a few, it's an open bar. I don't know if you've noticed.
I've seen Toby doing laybacks with the tequila.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
In the Qantas club.
Why do they domestically? It's all controlled, you know. But as soon as you cross the road in international, it's like Lord of the Flies. It's on for young and old, and so it's just like, how discreetly can I pour a bottle of rum into this tiny glass? So
why is your pump bottle water brown?
So we're giving it a nudge, and my friend, he's on Grindr, and he's chatting to some guy who's in the first class lounge.
Oh wow!
I would never get on Grindr at an airport because I've got no intention of hooking up with some closeted CEO. It's just, you know.
I don't turn on Grindr at airports because I'm on a very limited data plan,
and it'd waste it all.
So he's chatting to some guy on the first class lounge, and then we start boarding the plane, and two of us are upstairs in the hump, for want of a better word, and one of us is downstairs, and then, you know, we start drinking again. We're drinking champagne, and then we take off, and then, you know, it's you're drinking like you're at a wedding. You're red wine.
Yeah.
Oh wow, Skytrax has voted you best wine list in the sky. Well, let's start from the back with the cognac and work our way forward. You know?
I'd like to order a page one, please.
I'll have all of it, thanks.
Yeah. So,
I'll start from here and just wake me up when I get to the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, so meal service happened, and I actually don't remember that bit.
Jamie, this is sounding a lot like the time when I was hosting that gig at the Comics Lounge, and I don't remember saying, ladies and gentlemen, please thank Will Anderson at the very end, which you were also complicit in.
I locked that night out. That was apparently backstage. I don't remember. Anyway.
So what happens? You're eating your chicken or beef.
Well, I don't remember, and it was three courses. It was like,
oh, God.
You could have been in economy. What would you know?
Oh, I wouldn't do economy. I don't do food and meat in little trays.
When you pass out in economy, it's so uncomfortable.
Oh, dear. Yeah, there's more room to fall in business class.
I don't want to be a battery hen eating battery hen in economy. I'm very good with – I do it with points. Anyway, I'd never buy a business class – Anyway, so I wake up in the morning and
is it actual morning or is it just that arbitrary morning they decide when you cross the date line?
It's that 2 hours away from landing in LA, so 1 hour away from the flight attendant going, "You girls are huge." I wake up in my little shelf.
Yeah. Was it a drag queen that was?
I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure I've seen her on Oxford Street when I was living there doing drag. You know, 3 days in LA and a couple of days at the Oxford. I wake up in the seat and my ex is sleeping next to me in the same seat.
Oh, awkward.
Snoring. So, and then he goes back downstairs, and then my other friend is next to me, and I go, "What happened last night?" And he goes, "Well, you know the guy that I was talking to on Grindr and in when we're in Sydney." I went, "Yes." He goes, "Well, he's actually sitting two rows back in the emergency exit."
Oh my god!
I went, "Oh my god!"
You wing backed him.
I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, we were talking, and the next thing I know, we were just pashing each other." And I went, "Oh my god!" And then what happened? He goes, "Well, it ended with a tap on the shoulder from a flight attendant going, 'Excuse me, sir, but can you stop? It's really inappropriate.'"
"Can you put your penis back in your pants, please, sir?"
"Excuse me, sir, can you please stop? It's really inappropriate and kind of hot."
"Can you please stop that? I wanted to get on her."
And that was it. Next thing I know,
You were putrid.
Yeah, you girls are putrid. So I'm not proud of that.
So how did you end up with your cockpit in the cockpit?
I can't believe he got told off by Sandy Skymore. That is not... That's low.
No, the pilot was on a different flight.
Right.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So what happened in that one? I still don't understand how the pilot wasn't actually, you know, doing his job.
Well, there's autopilot. There's time for a bit of pinky.
They can move around. Yeah. They can. But no, that was on a different flight to Europe. Very boring. I just woke up and then my friend next to me was talking to the pilot. "And what's going on there?" He goes, "Oh, we're talking in the galley," and he's just giving me his number.
Ah.
That is bizarre.
Wow.
And they've been talking a lot. And I went, that's good. Because you get benefits from a pilot.
So what I'm getting here, Jamie, is that you travel with a whole lot of sluts a lot.
You are spot on, Scott. Yep. So put me next time. I can't wait to see what you get
up to. Have you ever joined the Mile High Club, Mr. Ron?
No.
You're saying no. A little too readily and quickly.
Like, nor have I done it with a cab driver. So I'm.
You're the anti-wed.
You know, I've learnt a lot from your podcasts over the years. I have no idea about that.
Oh my god!
Until I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and last year when I moved to Melbourne, I was getting lifts to work with a producer, and then this year she's moved, so I've had to get cabs to work. And I live in Fitzroy, just off Smith Street. So I'm getting taxis at like 4:30 in the morning.
Down Smith Street?
Yeah.
What unholy horrors.
And 4:30 in the morning. It took me 3 weeks, then I cottoned on. I just went, why is the same six European-looking guys dripping in gold smelling like Fahrenheit?
Because their plan is to get their cock sucked by someone who's been wandering the halls of Club 80 with no luck for the last 3 hours.
Desperate. Yes. So are you know, every time you get a cab, it's like, "Oh, I don't pay for cabs. I just do it on points."
I've just had an idea. Hold everything. Yeah, Jamie on hold. I've had a great idea. The first $1 million,
right,
is Hookup Industries. Imagine how popular an all-hookup airline would be.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Imagine an airline that had, like, some internal Grindr server going.
Oh, yes.
And you had, like, twink class and bear class and happily partnered just flying for chats class.
You know what it would be? And you'd still have those fucking battle axes that work on Qantas.
Yeah.
Those women just pushing the trolley down, popping, and she'd go, 36D has asked if you're available.
Yeah.
It'd be like the old telegraph system. Instead of sending messages, the old Qantas battle axes had come down.
Yes.
I caught a flight once with Joel Creasy, and I just kept sending him messages. You could send messages
between the seats. Yeah.
And he was trying to watch a movie, and I just kept going, can't. You're an asshole. Stop watching the movie and talk to me, you little shit. Well, thank you so much, Gamey Row of Tents. It's been delightful.
It's a pleasure. I don't think I'll ever come in, though. I think I've just got this wonderful vision of you all just sitting around in, like, I don't know, like a...
It's very uncomfortable broadcasting in a thong, I'll say that.
No, I've just got this vision of you in, like, inside Jeannie's bottle and sunken lounge and... Yes, enormous 1 litre bottles of Amel and, you know.
We're in a conversation pit, yes.
Yes, yes.
Look, it's been a pleasure and thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Anytime, darling. Thank you for your lovely mid-air story.
Yes.
Yes.
Happy landings, if you know what I mean. Australia is home to over 20 million people, literally some of whom are poofs. Poofs are a natural part of modern life, but like firearms, if mishandled, can cause irreparable damage and steal your good champagne. This summer, stop, think, be poof aware. Scenario: if your poof appears tired and listless, they may require some special care.
Adam, are you okay?
Research suggests the average gay man can go no longer than 4 days without watching another man dressed as a woman pretend to sing. If your poof is lethargic or appears depressed, he may simply be suffering from drag withdrawals.
Come on, Adam.
No.
Because of you.
I'm never straight sidewalk.
Because of you, yeah.
They play on the safe side so I don't get hurt. Because of you.
Scott, it's just too much. It's out of control. Scott, it's out of control. Everything.
I had sex with a vagina.
Stop. Think. Be poof aware. Be poof aware. Leave early or stay and exfoliate.
All right, it's time for the poofstery, Scott.
Hello, Mother Horror.
Very excited.
It's so lovely to be here again.
Oh, it's lovely to have you
trying
here.
Trying to ignore Toby waving at us from the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
We've only got three microphones.
Yeah.
It's what I've told him anyway.
It's so refreshing not having him in here.
I know.
Look, it's like...
odious thing.
It's good that,
he
that
is.
You set boundaries with him.
Yeah.
Because what he did before was wrong.
It was inappropriate.
We have to send him to Naughty Corner sometimes. Yes.
Well, it's because, you know, because he hasn't done grunting in a really long time, I think that part of his personality is reintegrating.
Yeah.
Like a multiple personality person.
Yes.
So what have you dusted off in your big book today, sistery?
I was looking over everything that I've done for you guys in this checkered career. And a boy. Checkered, that's the word.
Well, you can check it off your list.
I realised that there was something really glaringly missing. And also, too, something that if you are a young gay out there in the scene today, that you probably have no concept of why this is.
Well, we have a lot of young gays that listen, and we're sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are you saying that this might actually be useful for the young
This may
gays?
Be for the... So,
all right, strap yourselves in, listeners. This is the first time this has ever happened.
I'm going to loosen my harness.
So basically, I think it's important that we answer the important question, why Judy?
Why Judy?
Why Judy?
Judy
Why?
Garland, for those of you that aren't aware.
Because I was recently talking to a young gay gentleman and who said, I don't get Judy Garland at all. And I said, it's kind of a bit after my time as well, but the importance of Judy Garland as a gay icon is enormous.
Well, because when I was a little kid, I was obsessed with Liza.
Yeah,
because my nan had a Liza record and I would play it incessantly. And, well, there's the Wizard of Oz, of course. Mm-hmm. Yep. We all get a bit of Judy from that.
Oh, yeah. My gay uncle, who would be, God, almost 80 now.
29.
Were he alive. loved Judy Garland.
Yeah.
And I grew up with this kind of thinking, okay, I know she's really important, but I have actually no reason to figure out, to actually, no one ever sells you, oh, this is why she's important. Anyway.
Isn't it because she married a gay man and had a daughter, Liza?
Yes. who married a gay man.
She married two gay men. Yeah.
Which is one of the great placards that's been used in the same-sex marches. If Liza Minnelli can marry a gay man, why can't I? But anyway, so I think it's important that we answer the question, why is Judy Garland important?
Well, I've thought of this too.
It's a really weird thing.
It's hard to tell with a lot of kind of gay icons.
Yes. Yeah.
My interpretation of it has always been that Judy is the epitome of the onstage, offstage drama.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like there's no line.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important key to it. And I think also too, Judy Garland, as I'll explain, is a really good example of how a whole lot of things just converge and are projected onto her. And in different countries, she means different things. But she's one of those people that are the kind of last woman standing in gay iconography. Mm. Things get projected onto her. But anyway, I'll talk about three kind of things that why Judy may be important. So for you, those of you who don't know, Judy Garland, enormous film star of the 30s, 40s and 50s in particular. She was in Wizard of Oz. She was a very famous drunk. She was an important TV star in the late 50s, early 60s. And she died in 1969, which is a very important kind of time in gay history.
The date of her death is one of the most important dates.
Well, we'll get to that. Really interesting historical point. But anyway, so The thing is about Judy Garland, it's not a post-mortem thing. At the time, she was a gay icon.
Right.
And I found a really interesting Time magazine article from 1967, 2 years before her death. Now, Time magazine, which has been famously homophobic throughout its history, and this is a really good example.
Right.
It talked about, this is quite a major article that they did, and one of the most first kind of mainstream articles about gays and things. Yeah. Anyway, and it was basically off the back of a review of Judy Garland at the Palais Theatre. She was making a bit of a comeback. Yeah. And she was making a comeback, and it was all kind of thing.
But she was good when she was drunk.
Great. My grandmother used to swear black and blue that it was one of the most disappointing experiences of her life.
Yeah.
She went to see her in Melbourne and she was like, she could barely speak.
Right.
Like she was slurring so much. It was like seeing Fiona O'Loughlin gig.
Or
before she
or talking
got
puffy.
Back on the wagon.
Or
one of ours.
Yeah.
She was so upset. Because, you know, it's on the other side of the world waiting for decades to see this woman, and it was
absolutely
awful.
Yeah. Oh. So when she was, but during this, the review of this thing from Time magazine, the reviewer is some very uptight gentleman and basically called, and the thing he said in the audience, there was a disproportionate part of her nightly clack seems to be homosexual. The description is, an ecstatic young men in tight trousers prancing down the aisles to toss bouquets of roses, roll their eyes and tear at their hair, practically levitate from their seats during Garland's performances.
Oh,
so this is 1967. And and it's really interesting.
That's what I was like when I went to see Mariah.
It's like me at a Rufus concert. But Time magazine goes on to broaden out the article, they approached psychiatrists to figure out why was important.
Oh, and was homosexuality still a mental illness then?
Yeah, it was still a mental illness. So, of course, you go to a psychiatrist to explain anything gay. And Time magazine says, and this is quite interesting, the attraction to Garland might be made considerably stronger by the fact that she has survived so many problems. Homosexuals identify with that kind of hysteria. And that Judy has been beaten up by life, embattled, and ultimately had become more masculine. She had the power that homosexuals would like to have, and they attempt to attain it by idolizing her. Now, that's really homophobic and dodgy.
That is.
But within it is a really interesting point of the identifying with Judy because she went through so much.
Yeah.
Now, she had these failed...
Yes.
And she was a public drunk too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her TV show, which was very huge, and YouTube this because it's also too in
hilarious.
Terms of landmark in terms of variety TV, she was drunk and on fistfuls of barbiturates. Primitive.
Wasn't
she at the time.
Wasn't she kind of force-fed amphetamines when she was a teenager, because they wanted to keep her small because she was a she was quite a popular, you know, child actress, and so like when she did The Wizard of Oz, like that was when she was doing all those Mickey Rooney films, and she was a big deal, and so they, like, she was hooked from the age of about 14, 15 because of the studios,
and that they were diet pills too at the time, because early barbiturates, in particular the really kind of zingy ones.
Which were legal at the time.
Which were legal at the time. W.H. Auden, by the way, the greatest poetry of his career, which is probably the greatest poetry of the 20th century, was basically done on vodka and these diet pills.
Yeah.
That's an aside.
I miss diet pills.
I do. But anyway, so...
Well, basically some of our worst gigs and podcasts have been done
on
diet pills and vodka.
So basically, there was an identification with the fact that she was really tragic. Also, early in her career, when she was in The Wizard of Oz and a child actor and coming through, she was considered to be quite plain.
Yeah. Mm.
She was not a pretty, she wasn't like a Shirley Temple cute. Mm. She was a really plain girl who then gets beaten about by all of these sort of things in her life, gets hooked on booze and pills. And then, so in the 60s and 50s, when you're a gay man and you're looking to mass culture to identify with someone, she's kind of reflecting your own life.
Yes.
And we can look down on that right now. And if you're a Gen Y person, you're kind of going, what? But to those guys in the 50s and 60s,
where you
you didn't see yourself anywhere.
Yes.
She was really, really important. And also, too, one of the things that's always been pointed out by film critics is that in The Wizard of Oz, her relationship with the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, who describes himself as Sissy,
Not the three butchest men you've ever met.
No. But also, too, they immediately become a community and they get on with it.
Yeah.
And film critics have always pointed out that she's someone who accepted these people and then led them and they got on with it.
Yeah. And she was a fag hag. Apparently, in the first draft of that film, she was going to be driving them down the Yellow Brick Road in a Corolla.
The Emerald City was the peel. Yeah. That was disappointing.
She was always aware of how popular she was. Yeah. She said just before she died, "When I die, I have visions of fags singing over the rainbow and the flag at Fire Island being flown at half mast." Which I'd imagine it was.
Yeah, she wasn't wrong, I reckon.
You know what I always knew about her, even when I was a little kid, before I even identified as being gay, was the thing she did that no one else did at the time was like it was something about when she first sang Over the Rainbow for the soundtrack for Wizard of Oz before she went to mime it in the movie, that she was like, I just don't know if I can sing this. I'm having the shittest day. You know, she was not really having a good time. And the director went, sing it. Sing that. Like, if you can't, like, don't hide it. Don't damp that down. Mm-hmm. Just let that out. And that's why there's that, you know, that's so, it's so defeated at the start, but then it so rises to that hopeful belting.
And also, too, that was a very unpopular thing to do in Hollywood.
Yeah, you weren't allowed to let your emotions.
You weren't allowed to be emotional. Mm. And that was another thing. Here is this person on screen letting out their emotions. When you're a repressed gay man and you can't, you kind of think, God, good on you.
You can be the person we've always wanted to be.
This also explains that early fixation with torch singers, like the Judy Londons, the Eartha Kitts, and all of those people. If you look at a gay man's record collection of that time, it's all that kind of over emotive song.
Yeah.
And that's because you can have emotions, but I can't.
Yeah. But I guess it's that kind of double thing, that it's that the glamour of it all, and you know, the success and the glamour and how wonderful it all looks, plus that pain being represented, which is kind of what, you know, I guess the guys at that time were.
Well, she knew what a Hollywood glamour was, and you could see that she was the person behind the mask, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But other interesting things about her that some are important is the phrase "friend of Dorothy."
Mm. Yes.
Now, this is a very contentious phrase, and it's considered generally that it is about Judy Garland.
Right.
So basically, the idea, the very in the 60s in particular, in the 50s and 60s, you would if you were to say, is someone gay, you'd say, yes, they're a friend of Dorothy.
Mm.
And that was a good, very important and also worldwide code word for it's been gay. Now, there are a number of quite conflicting things. It's assumed to be Judy Garland, but it came into the first usage of this is just before World War II.
Right.
And 1933 was Wizard of Oz. So it kind of keeps him with that time.
Mm-hmm.
But also Dorothy Parker, it's ascribed to Dorothy Parker, the famous wit.
Yeah, all her friends.
She knew, and basically because she knew everyone. So basically, and a lot of people still defend that.
Mm.
And it was a very high society American kind of, you know, friend of Dorothy. But another interesting theory, which is kind of still held, especially in certain parts of New York, is a woman called Dorothy Kilgallen. Now, she was a journalist, a kind of showbiz journalist in early 60s.
So like what I do.
Similar.
Are you a friend of Adam's?
No. I hate that bitch. Oh, you're gay.
Yeah, the word friend of Adam is a really rare phrase.
Yeah.
But Dorothy Kilgallen, it's really interesting. In the 60s, it was then ascribed to her that if you're a friend, she hang out with a lot of gay men.
Yeah.
If you're a friend, you're a friend of hers. But she met a very interesting end. She died in 1969 in very weird circumstances. And that's because she wanted to branch out from showbiz celebrity. So she interviewed Jack Ruby, who was the guy that shot Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, she claims that she had a transcript of a conversation with Jack Ruby when no one else was looking at the trial. She got him. Apparently got some information off him and died quite soon afterwards.
Oh.
And it's a very interesting thing. And once again, her funeral was massive, very huge gay event.
Mm.
So lots of flowers.
So the friend of Dorothy's there. So those are the three competing
things.
Lots of Dorothy's.
But the final thing with Judy Garland is the funeral, of course. Now, a lot of people have said that the Stonewall riots, which are considered the birth of modern gay activism, were partly because of Judy's funeral, which had been just before. Now, gay historians in around the world have often said, well, these two things were, you know, Judy died, therefore we're going to break out and become new gays. This is hysteria. And a lot of people who were there at the Stonewall riots have always said, no, it wasn't that. One was playing.
I love that story.
No one was playing. And also, too, there's in the film, you know, they're playing Judy on the jukebox.
Yes.
It's all bullshit.
But because I thought it was one of those things where the police came in and raided it, you know, which they did for every 3 months.
And they went, that is it.
They went, not today. Not today.
And one of the guys who was at the Stonewall riot said, we were not the type to moon over Judy Garland records or attend her concerts at Carnegie Hall. We were more preoccupied with where we were going to sleep and where our next meal could come from.
Aww.
So basically, but apparently where Judy Garland was, the Stonewall pub was a bottle club. It didn't have an official bar. So you had to sign in. When you signed in, usually you put Judy Garland.
Oh, wow.
So that is a myth, but a nice myth.
A nice myth.
And the final one about Judy Garland is the rainbow flag. Because somewhere over the rainbow and then the rainbow flag that becomes part of thing.
Which is a ridiculous choice because it goes with nothing.
Absolutely.
But makes a really neat vest.
Yeah,
doesn't
it? Heavy set lesbian.
Yes.
And this
is very
generally
slimming. It's the vertical stripe. Yes.
And look, it's generally
that indigo bit. I look really fat in indigo.
Yes, purple is not our color.
No,
it's someone else's. So generally, generally it is ascribed. But generally the rainbow flag means all sorts of different people are included sort of thing. And it is generally related to Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
And well, I mean, the lyrics of Somewhere Over the Rainbow basically say, I know it feels like shit where you are now,
but
over the rainbow, bluebirds fly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which apparently they do. So So basically, there you are, Judy Garland. That's,
wow.
That's why, especially in the 60s and 70s and 50s, she was so important. She kind of was a bit of a lightning rod for all of these things. Mm. It's all
it's
fading
amazing,
now.
Yeah, how many ways she kind of influenced
us,
really.
Yeah, and it's odd that you... it's fading now because basically there's no real use for that kind of support and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she was quite extraordinary what she did. And whilst a lot of her stuff is not my cup of tea, YouTube her TV show.
Oh my God, it's hilarious.
And if you want to see the gayest thing in the world, the Barbara Streisand duet.
Ethel Merman, Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand. Barbara looks terrified.
Yeah.
Barbara looks scared of these terrible divas.
Ethel Merman forgets that she's singing with two other people and just starts going. It's hilarious.
It is seriously one of the most divine.
Every time I see the aliens from Mars Attack, I miss Ethel Merman.
There's a bit in it where she's saying, I hear you're doing Broadway. And Barbara's like, yeah, I'm doing a show called Funny Girl. She's like, who wrote it? She goes, it's Julie Stein. She goes,
oh. He wrote Gypsy! You know, I was in Gypsy forever!
Like, she can't even speak without screaming. Apparently the bitch couldn't hold a tune to save herself, but you could hear her in the theatre next door.
Yes. Oh, yes. You could. She was notorious for it. You could hear her from the street when she was on Broadway.
There's no business
with no microphones.
Business,
but maybe we'll try and find the link to that YouTube.
I will put it on the
website. It's hilarious.
It is horrific.
Noel Coward said of Ethel Merman, she said, Ethel Merman, the sound of demolition.
What are you saying, Noel?
Anyway, so it was a long one, but there you are, Judy Garland. But she is fading away. But
She was once
very important, and we should respect that.
I bought the DVD of the TV show for my nan, and we sat there and watched it for like a whole day. Fuck, it's funny.
Oh, wow.
When she would always have a tea party.
Yes.
Which she would sort of wink as if to say,
there's no tea in this pot.
Just gin.
I'm gonna go make tea.
Let's have a tea party.
Thanks, Mother Horan.
Righto.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much. That was the Poofcast. We will be with you, hopefully within the next month or two. But, don't hold your breath because you'll pass out from lack of oxygen. Or, maybe you'll stop eating and get quite thin.